Welcome to the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by JosephAuto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, every Tuesday, your Cincinnati.com Bengals Beat Writers take you inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Hear from players, coaches, and anyone else relevant to the team throughout the week. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play or listen on our must-have Bengals app. Let's go. All right, welcome to the latest edition of the BBP, Paul Leaner Jr. and Jim Osarski, for the second week in a row, coming to you live from my home office. I mean, I've got all kinds of very nice, I have lots of leather-bound books in here.
Yes, but I think we ruined the surprise, Paul.
Did we?
Yeah. There's an elf on the shelf in here.
Now, okay, that's true. There is an elf on the shelf. You want the story? You want the real story on elf on the shelf? I mean, I'll give it to you.
You might be, you know...
Let me tell you why there's Elf on the Shelf. We play, I don't really have a name for it except for it's mischievous Elf on the Shelf. Okay. So the Elf on the Shelf does a lot of things that are fairly questionable in nature around this house. And it goes back and forth where we choose. You know, it's currently my turn to figure out what I'm going to do. So I came into my office this morning and the Elf on the Shelf was here and the whole room had been toilet papered.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Gotcha.
So this type of thing happens. There's other things in the past that Elf on the Shelf does around my house, but I can't really talk about those.
If the podcast goes dark at some point.
Yeah, it's probably
right.
His fault.
Right.
It's probably okay. His fault. But this is what's happening. It's a good job painting the picture of the office right now. So that's my thinking.
I'm a scene setter.
You are a scene setter. That's where we are in the home office coming off of the Bengals 30. It's really when the Bengals play the Rams, win 31-7, these kind of things you need to talk about.
Yes.
Like elves on the shelf, books.
We kind of said
really
this.
Anything except for the Bengals game. That was the absolute just. I had for my Pearl Jam Monday, had to use the song Insignificance as my song, because I think when we look back on this, with the big picture of this season, the Rams game insignificance will fit with that. That's about it. It's a forgettable game where the Bengals won and got back on the right track and beat a bad team. Yeah. Bad club.
Yeah. It was amazing. And I remember it was maybe on this podcast a handful of weeks ago. It was like, oh, Rams could be a tough one. Todd Gurley's hot. That defense is stout. And then their quarterbacking play and their pass play looked a lot like the turkey bowls around this country with fat, overweight men trying to relive their glory. That's what Nick Foles looked like.
Yeah.
I hate to say it. Having played in turkey bowl games, their offense looked like... Look, when I played turkey bowl, we had like the 20-year-old on our team because he was the first pick. Because we all can't run.
Sure.
And guess what happened? Because we couldn't throw, it was jet sweeps in reverse to the 20-year-old because no one could get his flag.
Yes.
And that's what the Rams offense was a turkey bowl offense.
We've got one really fast guy and a pretty good running back, and we can't do anything else.
Right.
How creatively can we throw the ball or hand it off within 3 yards of the line of scrimmage?
Right. And let's be honest, against Geno Atkins and Vontaze Burfict, and that could work one time, and it did one time.
And it's one thing if you have a great offensive line that can just plow people,
right,
and you have the threat of running up the middle. These dudes, they were rolling out at guard because of injury.
Right.
I mean, that's unfair. And it was to have to line across from Geno Atkins is just unfair.
Yeah.
The way he's playing right now they had five guys, the Rams did, that were unavailable to them due to injury that started for them the previous week. Starters.
Yes.
The Bengals had every single starter from opening day plus Vontaze Burfict available to them.
Right.
I mean, that's just amazing to me. But that's what you get this time of year when you get a bad team that's fallen. It's not about who you play. It's when you play them.
Right.
And they caught the Rams at the right time, as opposed to some of the other teams that caught the Rams right when Todd Gurley got healthy and they still had some semblance of an offense in the passing game.
Right.
And they were able to take advantage. But, I mean, that was just –
it was the perfect storm for a beatdown because the Bengals had 2 weeks of just anger and frustration and getting yelled at by coaches, and then a bad team comes in that just is ready to give up.
Right.
And with a Turkey Bowl offense.
Yes.
So Bengals win Turkey Bowl 31-7. Yeah, fairly efficient beatdown. Not a whole lot to get into on that game, honestly. Bengals back on track 9-2 now and chasing that. The fallout, really, the interesting fallout was what happened after the Bengals game went final with Pittsburgh losing at Seattle and then Denver pulling off the win in overtime against New England to give them their first loss of the season. So now the AFC playoff picture and the Bengals hunt for the bye. I think we all were kind of thinking, everyone was thinking, well, New England's just going to run away.
Right.
And the Bengals would just be happy to collect the L from Denver and try to get into that 2 seed
right.
and get that home game. Well, now, not that New England isn't still going to run away. I think that's probably still the case. Their schedule's that easy. But it gets a lot harder now for the Bengals to try to get the number 2 seed.
Yes.
I think that is going to end up being under the radar, a really bad moment for the Bengals chase.
Right.
I mean, you could have made an argument if New England would have won that game that the Bengals could still go and to Denver, lose, and be the number 2.
Yeah, just because of the previous AFC losses to that Denver had suffered, and you know the whole strength of schedule thing, tiebreaker. Which I still don't quite. I understand it, but until I have to, you know, to write it tomorrow. But we did get in at Cincinnati.com. Yeah, they can't clinch a division yet.
No.
But also, that Denver loss was interesting. But see, I guess if you are a Bengals fan who views things positively, which I, you know, there's some of you.
It's good to have the four of you with us.
Yes. How big is that Houston-New England game on Sunday night? Because, as you said, when you play them, Rob Gronkowski will probably be out. Danny Amendola should be back.
No Julian Edelman.
But no Edelman.
Offensive line is beat up.
So, you know, is it out of the realm of possibility that this sort of streaking Houston team, if they hand, you know, New England is another surprise L, and all of a sudden you've got these two losses. Now the Bengals sort of shoot up because at the end of the year their strength of schedule will be better. It's fascascinating.
There's a lot going to be a lot of tiebreakers at play, but
right. What's the eighth here, tiebreaker?
Eighth
tiebreaker?
Oh, net shoot. Right on the spot. What was it?
It's like net touchdowns.
No, net touchdowns.
Yeah. We don't want to get to net touchdowns.
You never want to be in net touchdowns. You know what happens if it goes to net touchdowns? We just call the league.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what the hell's going on here? The ninth tiebreaker, net touchdowns. But like that's why Bill Belichick runs up to scoring everybody.
Yes.
You never know you're going to need net tutties to put you over the top. You're gonna need those.
I need them. Yes.
So some of the tiebreakers are just unbelievable. Let's hope it doesn't come to that. But yeah, you're right. So that Houston game, because that would be an AFC loss,
right?
And that's where a lot of tiebreakers are at right now. Would be the way if the Bengals won out and the Patriots lost at Houston. Both teams finished 14-2. I know we're getting a little crazy here, but if that happened, the Bengals would win that tiebreaker because of the AFC record.
Right.
So. That could be potentially the big game because the Patriots' schedule is so easy.
Yes,
I mean it is pathetic. What you're looking at them having to overcome, the Eagles, Eagles you hate watch the Chip Kelly train wreck, which is just it's unfair to train wrecks really to call it that. I think it really undersells the complete sense of chaos and hopelessness.
Yeah,
that's happening in Philadelphia. So New England will roll them, but that Texans game,
and then maybe the Jets game,
because it's in New York and the Jets can win.
How close Buffalo played them. I because this New England team is not like the other undefeated team in their history where they're just not as offensively or defensively dominant. The Giants had a chance to beat them. The Bills had a chance to beat them.
Because of the injuries, they're much more vulnerable, and the Gronkowski thing changes everything for them.
I mean,
it's the equivalent of Eifert, if maybe even bigger than that, for them.
Yeah,
because of what's happening with their receiver position.
Until they lost, I was unwilling. I mean, I didn't think they'd go undefeated. I you know, I thought maybe 15-1, they could still do that. But this goes back to a conversation we had on BBP many, many weeks ago where we could have 3 14-2 or a 13-3 team battling for two spots. And I think, you know, Brock Osweiler showed me a little something on Monday night, but or Sunday night, excuse me. But I don't know if he can do that against Adam Jones and Drake Kirkpatrick in coverage. I think the Bengals are better.
It's really,
in that area.
Yeah. I mean, a lot can change between now and then.
We're assuming health and all those things, and maybe Peyton Manning's back, and this is like they're in the middle of some crazy QB controversy and not ready to play. I mean, who knows? I mean,
the latest reports out there saying that going to be over a month to maybe even longer than that until Peyton Manning's even in the conversation of being healthy enough to come back.
Right.
You know, I mean.
And that's about when they would play.
Could you imagine having to tell a healthy Peyton Manning to say, I mean, that's a whole other conversation for the Denver BBTP to worry about the DBP.
Right.
No. Would they be the BBP too? Yeah. They'd be the Broncos Beat podcast. So the DBP, the DBBP,
right,
to worry about. But, I think that this team is in a very nice spot right now. And the one thing that they need to do is have that big win against what has clearly differentiated themselves as the elite of this league. And we talked about last week how the elite of this league just don't play each other that often. I mean, there's only about seven teams worth talking about anymore.
Right.
There's seven teams that have more than six wins.
Yeah.
Right now.
This is the wrong kind of parody.
No.
The NFL loves parody.
Roger hates this. He thinks this is the worst season ever. But for him, it's the best. Guess what? Zero teams have been eliminated from the playoffs.
That is true.
Right now, after that,
Chicago
never happened before.
Freaking out with their 5-6 crappy Cutler team.
Well, that's just it, because everyone still has hope. So they get the elite teams that can duke it out, but there's so much just crap football that's happening that some of that is going to end up, you know, oozing its way into the playoffs.
Right.
And Bengals fans just hope they don't lose to that.
Yes.
For chaos.
I think they're done. And I wrote this in somewhere at Cincinnati.com. We have so much Bengals stuff.
Often.
I don't remember where it is, but I wrote in there that or maybe it was on Twitter. I don't know that somewhere that I think the Bengals are done losing to inferior teams. I still think Houston's an inferior team, although as the weeks go on, that loss looks less and less
terrible.
You know, especially if the Houston were to rise up and beat New England, you'd look back and say, "Oh wow, the Bengals only lost by a score on a late fumble to a really good team." But I don't know. I think they pound Cleveland and they do control their destiny and they are in good shape.
I'm glad you brought up bad teams, because we can talk about the Browns because they're extraordinarily bad.
Yes.
However, even the worst Browns clubs in some of the best Bengals years, this team has gone to Cleveland and struggled. It's weird. Now, last year was the Johnny Manziel game. You almost throw it out. I mean, he's so terrible. It was his first start. They finally were, you know, Cleveland was just ready to see, I wonder how good this guy is, and they learned quickly he is awful.
Right.
And it fired the Bengals defense up all week, getting a chance to get up and do the money signs. It was really an anomaly because it created a sense of importance of that game.
Right.
Whereas I think a lot of the times is there's just a general overlooking of the Browns because, well, they're terrible.
Right.
And they're just been a joke for so long. But let's take a look back here.
You and your facts.
I hate facts. 2013, maybe the best Bengals team. 2005, 13, that 13 regular season Bengals team was extraordinary. They 8-0 at home. They were a great team. Won the North. Very similar to this type of team. And they lost at Cleveland 17-6 in week 4 in just an ugly, ugly game where just nothing went. Brian Hoyer was the quarterback for the Browns in that game. 2012 had a pretty good team too. And they went to Cleveland and lost 34-24. Now, that was kind of in the midst of a midseason. They lost 4 games in a row in the midseason and then all of a sudden turned everything around after that. But still, they had a good squad. Went up to Cleveland, lost 34-24. They had a win in Andy Dalton's first ever start in 2011. I mean, so you just go back, and these games just tend to be ugly. Even if you go back as far as back to 2005, and people remember, oh, God, how good the Bengals were. They were coming off their big win at Pittsburgh that year, which is a defining win in the Marvin Lewis era. The next week, they barely won in Cleveland, 23-20, and they had to throw a touchdown pass to Chad Johnson in the last seconds to send it to overtime. These are just these weird things happen up there. I'm not saying that's going to be the case now, but Johnny Football is not going to be a quarterback.
Right.
Josh McCown has had some good games this year.
He had.
Cleveland is beat up. Their hope, if they can get Joe Hayden back, he's out with a concussion on Monday Night Football, he changes everything for them defensively against the Bengals because
right.
he does such a good job against A.J. Green. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying.
You're going to let me go up 3-0 in the predictions? Up 3 in the predictions? You're going
to
go Cleveland?
I don't want to commit to that yet. I don't want to commit to anything yet. I did say in my preseason predictions, this was my late season hiccup.
Yes.
Just on the way out, just kind of just thought that this would be a hiccup game for them where you just get caught. Now, coming off a hiccup against Houston,
right?
I think it's less likely, and I think that they seem to be refocused, and Cleveland is real bad. But just beware a bit. Just beware a bit. I mean, I think they could be a little overconfident by what happened on that Thursday game where Cleveland was completely hurt. Everyone thought they were going to be traded 2 days before.
Right.
I mean, it was almost unfair. Now they go to the factory of sadness. We'll see. I'm just saying there's a history.
Yeah, that's fine.
I know.
I've mocked your Bengals history to this point.
You have. You have. Yet. Yet.
And
it could still repeat itself.
Yeah. And I think we will all the way through the postseason, I'm sure, to a certain point. But, Cleveland's bad. They're so bad. And,
yeah.
And Joe Football. Johnny, whatever his name is. Johnny
Football. Joey Football.
Joey Football. That's what he is now. He's Joey Football.
Yeah.
He, he's going to be active. He was active Monday because they don't have enough guys on their 46 man.
Yeah.
So
because
they're
all too hurt.
Even if Joe Hayden somehow returns from his second concussion this year to play in a meaningless game for them, I don't even know if that matters because who's going to cover Tyler Eifert and Marvin Jones?
Good question.
Nobody. You know what I mean? And yeah, I guess the Browns, we can remember the first half of Thursday's game where it was fairly tight. Johnny Manziel did move the ball and possess the ball for a while until the Bengals eventually pulled away. And Josh McCown, I think, had played well enough to say that could happen again. It could be 10-7 or 14-10 at the half. But I think, they're just so bad and so hurt. And,
okay.
Yeah.
I won't necessarily disagree with you. You brought up something that we do need to hop into real quick, and that's Tyler Eifert.
Yeah.
12 touchdowns, leads the NFL, and he's on pace still to break Rob Gronkowski's record for touchdowns by a tight end in a season, which is seven receiving touchdowns, 17, 18 total. Had a stinger on Sunday.
Yeah. On a great play, too.
Yeah, yeah. Him recovering Giovanni Bernard's fumble, and it was a 45-yard screen. Great hustle play, but dives on it, ends up getting a stinger. Says he's okay. We talked to him after the game. He said, he's dealt with this type of thing before. Just had to make sure he got all the feeling back and everything was feeling back to feeling normal. He was originally announced as probable to return.
Right.
In the press box, which is how they always give an instant analysis of every injury as quick as they can. But sometimes it does then get downgraded later depending on how they react as the game goes on. Well, immediately after, Bengals score a touchdown. Right after that, Leon Hall hits pick six.
Right.
Suddenly it's a 24-point lead. Three guys got downgraded all at once.
Yeah.
So we don't know how much of that was like they're all getting worse
right.
or they all were just told, sit the hell down, don't hurt yourself. Right. We're winning this game by a lot. That's what happened to Tyler Eifert. He got downgraded after that. So I asked him after the game if he thought he would get in, if it was a regular game, and he said, oh, maybe, probably. It wasn't, yes, I would have gone back in. It was not that. And let me just say this. Stinger is the one word that worries me with Tyler Eifert, and it has since he sustained it his rookie year. You start getting in that area, the shoulder, neck
right.
area. It's just things that linger. It's a scary thing. I mean, he attempted to play through it his rookie year when he had one and sat out a week before the playoff game and could only go through three plays in the playoff game until they had to shut him down because the big picture was more important. You start getting in that area. It's scary, and he's dealt with this before. And you worry when you hear that word. Now, everything appears to be okay from what he's saying and from what we're hearing. It sounds like it's okay, but you worry about re-aggravating. You worry about the start of something that could be a neck injury and a stinger type thing with him, particularly considering how important he is.
You don't want
to hear that.
And what's interesting, you mentioned earlier the health of this team and that they're healthier. With Cedric Obwehi now on the 50-man roster, 53-man, and Vontaze Burfict, Marvin Lewis, and Paul Gunther told us on Monday that Tez is getting, they're seeing the wow in him in flashes. He's getting healthier, and they're able, because everyone else is healthy, they're kind of allowing Tez to work back in. So, and to that point, this team has been able to let guys miss a game or miss time. And now, granted, no one's been as good as Tyler Eifert.
Right.
In this case, we're talking about like some backup linemen and things of that nature. I mean, Adam Jones missed in Arizona because he was really hurt, and he said he was 65% against St. Louis. Would they do that for Tyler Eifert? Would they say, you know what, it's Cleveland, let's give it a rest and let's go with what we got? We got AJ Green and a running game, and that feels good. I don't know. Do they suit him up and see if he can go for a couple plays, but then see if they can get out to a lead? Me personally, I always favor health and down the line, and this team is playing for something greater than a win in Cleveland, and I think they could beat Cleveland without a couple starters on each side. So if it were up to me, I'd say, you know what, Tyler, how are you feeling? Nah, okay.
Yeah.
Because we need you. We're going to need you to catch two touchdowns and be healthy against Pittsburgh to win a division.
Right. Because at the end of the day, that's what really matters.
Right.
We'll see what comes of that, and we'll be tracking it, of course, for you. But just something to kind of plant in your head a little bit going forward. I want to talk for a second about Geno Atkins. Because
he ain't talking about it.
Because he ain't talking. Because Geno speaks. What is Geno? Geno speaks this week. What was Geno's? Geno speaks this week was He spoke
to me to tell me he wouldn't speak.
Yeah.
So there's no audio of this, everyone. I see Geno and run over to him. And, hey, Domata is in the middle of this just flowering praise. And Geno's right next to him. And Domata's like, Geno is amazing. He just destroyed everyone against St. Louis. I mean, he's fantastic. He's great. And there's Geno sitting next to him, no reaction. I say, Geno, you got a second? And he said, no, I've been in here 30 minutes. And I said, not even one question? And he says, no, Jack Brennan, the Bengals PR director. He said, Jack said I need to be in here for 30 minutes, and I've been in here 30 minutes.
And what does that mean?
Nobody knows what that means. Even Jack didn't know what that meant. So I... but he did say some words, which
that is technically words said to you.
You're
on a good streak, of him saying
and
words
that follows
to you,
up
even
him
if
telling
don't
me
speak.
That follows up him telling me thank you when I held the door for him on Wednesday.
Yeah, that was huge.
He said thank you. Yep. So I've had a lot of Geno speaks, but nothing. Yeah. Unfortunately, no audio. To provide
actual
him.
Audio worth talking about.
But anyway.
Still on the grind though.
Yeah.
We're still working on it. Don't worry. One of these days we'll have him for you in some capacity. But the reason that it's been a funny joke, a gag for us to talk about here on the podcast. But the bottom line is the guy is playing his face off, and the reason we want to speak to him so badly is because he is the best player on their team, arguably, right now, and maybe one of the best in the league. I mean, you talk about we had a discussion with Paul Gunther that I'm going to bring to you here in a second that we were talking about him involved in Defensive Player of the Year conversations. If you really take a look at impact and what one player is bringing to an entire defense, I mean, it's worth looking at that way. I'm going to take you in. We sat down with defensive coordinator Paul Gunther this week, and discuss it, coming off a game against St. Louis where he just completely dominated. So we kind of went into the idea of him as Defensive Player of the Year and the recognition that deserves and what it all means in the big picture. And I don't think most people probably won't put him in that conversation, and a lot of it because there's these superstar, not only players, but personalities like J.J. Watt, and you know everybody slurps over Aaron Donald right. all day, every day. And
Josh Norman's on ESPN.
People loving him, and the guys that are getting all the pick sixes, you know, we've got Chris Harrison in Denver. Just a lot, you know, Von Miller. These guys that are much more, I think, household names, but those in the know, would view Geno Atkins as having a similar type of impact. But anyway, so here's us sitting down with Paul Gunther talking a little bit about all of that concept, as long as a few other concepts. So here's that conversation.
You said back in the preseason, talking about Geno, that you know he was going to be back this year. I mean, what gave you that confidence coming into the year that?
Different guy. Yeah. I saw what kind of shape he came back in. He's a different personality. He's been tremendous this year. Tremendous. I mean, he's he ruined half the runs in the beginning of the first half.
Yeah.
They couldn't block him.
Since you called out Geno, he hasn't talked to us. You think that's related?
I don't know. It's for you guys to figure out. He talks to me more than ever.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Chatty catty, huh?
No, he's just, I like to talk to those guys about the rush plan. You know, we go into the game with a rush plan. And, they understand, we talk about, the different kinds of protections you may get. And they do a tremendous job after coming off and say, hey, is what we're doing working? We find that hole in there. Right. Or we get into the weakness in the protection. And they'll give me great feedback. Yeah, keep calling that one or keep, this one. And you got to rely on your guys like that. I mean, sometimes you can't see it from the side. There's someone upstairs may not see it all the time. But the guys can, give you feedback. So we do a lot of different things, even 4 or 5 man rush affect the protection, how we can open it up and give guys space. But not only is he doing good in the rushing, I don't know where he's at. He's probably up there in sacks somewhere in the league.
He's tied for defensive tackle.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to be up there overall, though, right?
Yeah, he's in the top eight.
Yeah, I mean, which for defensive tackle. But he's playing in the running game. I mean, obviously, you see what he's doing in the running game. So he's a threat in the running game. He's a threat in the passing game. So it's... that's a handful for an offense in there. I'm glad he's on our side.
We hear a lot about Watt and even Donald and these guys. I mean, you talk about a defensive player of the year type. I mean, it seems like
right.
He probably doesn't get enough run in that.
No doubt. No doubt. No question. He should be. Y'all should write that. He does deserve to be in that. Mm-hmm. You ask anybody on their offense, any offense we play, the first guy, when they turn the tape on Monday morning and they look at the tape, they say, we have a better plan for this guy. So, I mean, that's, maybe we haven't talked enough, but I said earlier in the season that he should be in that conversation. He's done nothing not to be in that. So.
You touched on it, but how does it free you? I mean, you're talking about you don't have to have the 8-man fronts.
You don't have to, draw up a whole bunch of new blitzes. Maybe you want to get him one-on-one, just how you get him isolated on a guy in a pass rush. Or use him some way to get another guy free. Where he may get double, we get this guy free. But, I mean, to me, like I said, we're number one in scoring defense.
Is it an oversimplification to say the biggest difference between last year and this year for your entire defense is 97? That's really – or I mean, there's more to it than that, but is it really that kind of really where the conversation starts, though?
Well, yeah. I mean, he's our best player. He's playing good, but we're healthier this year. I mean, let's face it, guys. We were playing with guys aren't on our team anymore. In the middle of the season, we're playing against Indianapolis Colts against good offenses in the middle of the season. Guys are that wouldn't even they're not make our team this year. So right, they're still out there. So
yeah,
that's just what it is. I mean, we're just healthier. We're playing better as a unit. We're just playing better. I mean, we just got better guys, and we're healthy. I don't have to sit there looking at my call sheet and say, I can't call this, I can't call that, because it puts this guy in a bad matchup all the time, So, to me, that's the most important. That's the number one thing, and then you can talk about the level of play of some of the guys.
So, I mean, how do you gauge when you look at really his impact, and would you put him in the conversation for a Defensive Player of the Year?
Well, I would have to say yes, because he fits the one sort of star statistical measure, which is sacks, right? So here's a defensive tackle who's in the top 5-6 in total sacks. He'll hit double digits. Probably set his career high. At least on pace to.
11.5 is his career high.
Yeah, so I mean, he's already got 8, you know, against some bad defensive lines and quarterbacks coming up. And so there's your star stat, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he fits that. And then, you know, you break down after that, and you just look at this number one scoring defense in the league. I think the Bengals will kind of flirt with that title throughout the year.
Yeah.
They really only have a couple other offenses that can maybe run up some points on them. And so you got to have that. And then to me, it's just everything that they do starts from him and it works itself out.
Yep.
So it's Carlos Dunlap who has always said all year long, a lot of his sacks, his 8.5 and his pressure comes from Geno. The defensive backs who are having good seasons say that dude is, you know, getting us passes early.
Yeah.
You know, and getting quarterbacks to throw wobbly ducks and things. And I'm sure the linebackers will say, look, that guy is in terms of the run game. So we see him every day, you know. We saw J.J. Watt, and he played – okay against the Bengals.
Mm-hmm.
Sack late, but was kind of a non-factor to me in a lot of ways. So he deserves to be in a conversation, but this kind of goes back to what you're saying with our sort of gag with Geno Notes and Geno Speaks. Can you earn those type of honors when no one hears you or sees you outside of what? Because it's not sexy. I mean, he's not demonstrative.
The problem is who gives these awards. And so what are we talking about? We're talking about a Defensive Player of the Year award. I mean, it's voted on by people that are not those that grind over the film of every single team. That's just not how these awards are given, and a lot of it ends up going to personalities and guys that make big splashy plays. Whereas anyone will tell you, when you look at the drafts every single year, why does everyone spend all their top picks on guys that play defensive tackle?
Right.
Because that is the true position where if you have a game changer in there, it does just that. It changes the game on every single play.
Right.
And Geno does that. Aaron Donald does that. Gerald McCoy does that. There's a select few people in this league that truly do that, that aren't just 350-pound, you know,
space eaters
that just sit there. The Gilbert Browns these giant men, Vince Wilfork.
Yeah.
But they're not necessarily rushing it. But when you can rush the passer and stop the rush and everything comes right up from under the quarterback's face, it just changes everything. And so I think that should – and it's harder to do it from there. It's exponentially harder to stats from there compared to rushing around the edge all day.
Right, yeah, because inherently you have three men who can easily – get their hands on you,
mm-hmm.
with the center and both guards, depending on what the protection is, where you go, you know, and a running back stepping up. I mean, it's
so much easier to be a guy that just rushes around the edge.
Which is the funny thing because, Marvin Lewis said on Monday, well, you know, some people might notice him because he did make the Pro Bowl last year. And on one hand, you could almost argue that Geno made the Pro Bowl last year as an alternate.
Deep alternate
because of the fact that he had made a Pro Bowls and All Pros like before.
Yeah.
So you could argue like last year's
It was a reputation vote.
Right. Which is good to have the rep for Pro Bowls, but when you're talking about like, yeah, that sort of, and let's face it, like Hall of Fame worthy. Look, I was in the NFC North and covered teams, you know, the Chicago Bears and Brian Urlacher. People thought, oh, he's great, but he wasn't talked about as far as a Hall of Fame type player until he won that Defensive Player of the Year in 2006. And oh, by the way, who did they have on the inside? Tommy Harris as a three technique, destroying people up front. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it all that guy matters. And you kind of need, and not that Geno, I don't think he really cares about any of that stuff. Maybe he does. He just doesn't.
We wouldn't know. We don't talk to him.
Right. But, we talk at him.
We do talk at him.
We talk at him.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But, yeah, you're right, Paul. I, you know, And it was funny because Paul Gunther was like, yeah, I don't know, how do we get him more pub? Maybe I need to talk more about him, which was kind of funny. It was hilarious because it's like his teammates are, you know, ask any of them, they love on the guy.
And I don't know that him speaking to us in complete sentences or just small phrases or going on a junket. I mean, I don't know that any of that changes. You think it would help him become more?
I think if he
ended up on the cover of Sports Illustrated, it would make a difference.
And he sits down with John Gruden.
Right.
Running into Monday Night Football.
Absolutely. He's had those opportunities, and what has he done? He's passed on
them. So, again, I mean, he's consistent.
There's nothing wrong. You know what? Because, yeah. I mean, we joked about it in the preseason in Tampa Bay.
Right.
It was, Gino, they want you for the production meeting to sit down with Gruden and Tirico, and he just blew it off and didn't go. And it, just the same way he blows everything with us. And the Fox Sports, after the game, Tony Siragusa, Mr. Inside Defensive Tackle, wanted to talk with him after the game about blowing up the game, and the Bengals PR staff were basically like, yeah, that's probably a dead end. It's not going to happen.
They asked if they wanted the quarterback. Yeah. Like, how often does that happen?
Can we just give you the quarterback? Can you have that? But so if he was out there talking to Tony Siragusa in production meetings and on the cover of Sports Illustrated, because if he really went out there and gave a exclusive interview and was open or whatever, I think that would be a possibility. You know, I mean, whatever, anything like that, and soaked up a little bit more of that. Maybe he would be more in these conversations, but does he care about that?
Obviously not.
Obviously not. And he's clearly uncomfortable with that situation, and I fully respect that.
Yeah.
I mean, he need to talk to us. He need to talk to anybody.
No.
But you do need to understand that if you're going to have conversations about how he deserves, how do you get him more pub for defensive player of the year? Well,
yeah.
That's how. That's a part of the way how.
Right. And it's interesting because, you know, I know sometimes when media types drift into these conversations, fans are like, whatever, we don't care. But it's funny, though, because at least here in Cincinnati, I think people want to hear from him. I mean, you guys can tweet at us, hashtag BBP, but when we do our kind of gags about this on this podcast, when I do Geno notes, like, people ask, they're like, you know, is he mad at you personally? Is he mad at everyone?
No, he doesn't talk to anyone.
So I think, you know, in town at least, there's a desire to hear from the best player on the team.
Yeah.
And
his story's interesting.
Yeah.
And I think it's one that needs to be told and if he doesn't want it out there, maybe that's part of it. Is maybe he doesn't want to talk about his insecurities with coming off the ACL last year and frustrations and being called out by his coordinator as just a guy and one of the 20-something best three techniques in the league, even though he made the Pro Bowl 2 days later. Don't throw that Pro Bowl crap out there, by the way, too. I hated that. But, I mean, it's, you know, but that's all part of it. I mean, that's a great story. It's interesting to hear about it. And I just think people would want, and if more people knew it, if we had more insight to it, I think more people would appreciate what he's doing.
Right.
Not that he needs that. Not that he cares about the awards. Not that anybody, that people should pay closer attention to just what happens between the lines, but they don't.
Right.
And that's how these things go. So if you're going to talk about, should a guy win this, can a guy win this, I think that has to be part of the conversation, unfortunately or not. Now, the people that do, maybe you're Pro Football Focus, that are very focused on what happens between the lines, or coaches, if coaches got together and really broke down who deserved what, you would get the proper, I mean, people would say, yeah, obviously, 97. Yeah. I mean, he's part of it.
Yeah, but he's on pace for an All-Pro, which, again, we've talked about how much more difficult of an honor that is to earn
than
a Pro Bowl, and he's on pace for that.
Yeah.
You know.
He should be. I mean, who are we talking about that's playing better than him right now? Aaron Donald was right across the way the other day, and he was pretty much not heard from, even though both guys were receiving double teams.
Yeah, by position, at D-tackle. I mean, Dominican Sue says he's a great leader.
Yeah, he's a great leader.
Runs
that
defense.
He runs that defense that just got owned for 38 by the Jets. Well played.
Yeah.
114 mil.
So there is a difference between
114 mil.
See, there's a difference between, you know, that's funny we bring up Dominic, you know, and that you know, that gets out, and it's like, well, what good does that do? That guy actually talks, and look what happens. But, you know, I don't know. I think we've done this the right way. Like, we're not complaining at all. We actually have fun with this. But yeah, Gino, it is
it's just because he's so
it
good.
It is interesting. Yeah, he's
it's
so good.
It's because he's so good, and his story's very interesting. Yeah. And I just think that's all. That's all it really is. Let's move on from Gino Speaks.
People love Gino Speaks. People do. It's so underrated.
People do. The Gino notes are continue. What was it? Did you eat two turkeys
for Thanksgiving?
Hey, will you talk to me next week? Yes, no, maybe. We did decide that we should hang that in his locker. We should go to just hanging the notes in his locker with the boxes for him to fill out. Then you come over, he's gone, but the boxes have been checked, and we have answers.
Right.
So, did you eat two turkeys? let's move on. Okay, so news came out Wednesday of last week, which we tried to allude to. We've been trying to allude to this very under the radar for a while. We've kind of had been tipped off, but, you know, there's a lot of things at play for why we
A lot of ins, a lot of outs,
a lot of what have you as to why we do and do not report certain things immediately. But basically, you know, the Bengals are going to London next year. And they're going to play against the Washington Redskins on October 30th. Jay Gruden may still be there, which I'm excited because I feel like that could be a good opportunity to hang with Jay for a couple of days, who was one of my favorite coaches ever to cover. When he was here, I mean, the Bengals are on a great coordinator run. I mean, Hugh Jackson is fantastic. Jay was just as good. Zim was a delight in a different way.
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't as loquacious at the time, but just as great to be around. Paulie G's great. I mean, they have just had a great run of coordinators here, and Jay is amongst them. So I hope he's still the coach of the team next year, selfishly, so we can hang out with him for a few days.
Well, usually guys get fired after that game. So
yeah, so maybe that'll be the one. Right. Maybe he'll be fighting for his job at that point.
They'll win the NFC East at 7-9.
Yep.
So
they'll start next year, you know, like 2-4, right. 2-5, get hammered by the Bengals in London, and he'll get fired, which would be unfortunate because we like Jay. But so they're going to London, and I think the reaction to me was interesting for a one reason, and that's I expected there to be some blowback on giving away the home game, and I think it's understandable. I mean, you're a season ticket holder for a reason. You want to go to all those games. You want to go to 8 regular season games. I mean, you take one away, 1/8 of what you were signing up for.
Right.
I mean, you're paying the same amount per game. They're not going to charge you for 8 and you go to 7 or whatever. But, you know, still, you're giving that up, and you're giving that up for the city, and there's a lot of argument to be made that there's just not a whole lot of good that comes of it, and the Bengals sell the side of – well, the international exposure can be a great thing for this city.
Right.
This city wants to be known as an international city. This can help bridge the gap to that and put people here that are in businesses in front of decision makers in London, and people in London that have never heard of the city of Cincinnati now suddenly will, and that's worth something.
It is worth something. It's just hard for most people to grasp.
I mean, I think it's a very – It's hard to say, oh, well, I see the big picture. I mean, but if you get on the map internationally and become a thing that cities consider you from Europe and beyond now more as a part of the same way that being in an NFL franchise puts you on the map in the United States. I mean, teams that when cities lose NFL teams around here, or cities that don't have pro teams, it is a demarcation of being an important city, of being a real city, and one that should be relevant in the big picture. If you don't have a professional franchise, you're a second-rate city. Period.
Yeah, it's funny about this, Paul, because I actually just came here to Cincinnati from an arena debate, which I know is everybody's favorite topic, in Milwaukee, but that was the point. It was like, you're going to let an NBA franchise walk away. What does that mean? Now you're left with a baseball team. It's like, oh, that matters, but well, you know, there's no NFL team in Milwaukee, so you're right. And look, I get it. It was funny because some people tweeted at me like, "You're telling us how to feel, but don't tell us how to feel."
Yeah.
As a writer, you guy, like they were so mad. But you know, I get it. here's the thing. They were going to go no matter what.
Everyone's
going. I
understand
going. Then it's like, well, it should have been a road game, but you know what? There's always a home team.
Yes.
So it's just one of those situations where the bullet was going to have to be bitten, and honestly, it's a 50-50, you know, coin flip in a way. I know it's not that. I mean, the Bengals, you know, you did a great job breaking down how and why they mm-hmm. decided to do what they did, but, you know, it. What? I get it, but I don't, if that makes sense. I understand publicly financed stadium and season tickets, but you know what? How many games have they sold out already?
It's the point that is sort of it's
we're outraged. You're taking away another game we can't go to.
That we won't sell out. And there are so many, you know, tens of thousands of diehard Bengals fans that do a great job supporting this team,
right.
And that's all very important. But, you know, when you are one of those franchises that, until this year, constantly had to worry about the blackout rule.
Right.
That were one of the few, the very few that we talked about in that regard. This type of thing comes into play.
Yes.
And right or wrong or indifferent, that's just the truth. And I don't think that's where this comes from. I think the Bengals want to be team players within the league.
Right.
And that's a big part of it. It's part of the process. Is this league is all about international, and the way that they've grown the game and the crowds they get, they sell out instantly for these games at Wembley Stadium.
Yes.
I mean, you're talking
over 80,000.
80,000 people there that are just going crazy for the NFL, and that's your team. Guess what? Some of those 80,000 people are important business, you know,
yeah.
movers and shakers.
And Cincinnati's got a good rep, you know, with Fortune 500 companies who do business internationally.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's not, in terms of that, that is bigger picture, that is above the fray of the tailgate in that extra game you're going to miss. But to your point, Paul, coming from Green Bay, look, they want the Packers to play overseas. The Packers sell out 75,000 plus at Lambeau. They're not going to give up a home game. Why?
Yep.
Because they sell out 75,000
yep.
every single game.
And have a waiting list. Yeah, on
so
top
the,
of everything else.
Know, that matters.
Yeah, but it was really interesting news. And
yeah, good job,
you know,
by you.
All of
I'm
us.
I'm giving you
both
a back,
of us.
Back pat.
Back, back pat for you. Let's back pat each other. This is the back pat portion of
the BBP.
No, yeah. I mean, we were all over it and happy to bring you all the information of really how it all happens. Because I think it's one thing to hear, hey, the Bengals are going to London. But I think there's so much more to it than that.
Right.
And the whole international growth of this league is so interesting. You know, I follow the Premier League and really enjoy watching soccer, and they've done a good job of growing it through the television program here.
Right.
But what you haven't seen is them bring real games
right.
over here. And I think that would only help. I think you would see the same response that you're seeing the NFL over here, and really help grow the game even more
right.
if people got a real feel for what real Premier League games were like.
Right. And can you imagine the Man U fan base if they just took Man U and Arsenal and dropped them in Soldier Field? And
right.
Those people would freak out too, because how could you take our team away?
Yeah, so, oh, I mean, absolutely just, they would.
You
but
know.
It's but it, if you it, it's a league that is looking at, listen, the NFL can't be bigger here.
Right, exactly.
You yeah. can't be bigger here, so if they're going to grow the game, they have to continue tapping
right.
international fan bases. And the truth is, it's a very Americanized sport. But the second people get a hold of it, they do love it. And they've seen that over there.
Yeah.
So why would you not continue to make sure those people feel connected? And bringing new teams over, and teams that, whether you want to hear it or not, hey, the Bengals are a high-profile team.
That was actually one of the tweets that struck me the most. Was when this people from England were tweeting, hey, they're bringing a good team over.
Right. That's true.
Like, they're excited because the Bengals have been in the playoffs the last 4 years.
Bengals,
and, believe it or not, have been on primetime, which are some of the few games that aren't blacked out over there. So say what you want about the record. They're excited because they're like, we know that team. We know
yes.
Andy Dalton, A.J. Green, and those guys. It's
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah, it's a big deal for them. And the U.K. fans, man, we heard.
Yes.
I'll tell you what. I learned last week that I have a lot of followers over there. A whole lot of followers, because I was just getting bombarded by all these people in the UK who were so pumped that the Bengals are going over there. I mean, I think every single Bengals fan from the UK sent me a tweet with just exclamation points.
Right.
And I mean, they were completely jacked about the Bengals being over there. What do you think? What else do we got? Oh, Jags were so jaggy this week in our weekend Jags. I really thought they were 4.5-point favorites against the Chargers.
Second time in 5 years home.
They didn't build on their trend of being 1-0 in that previous game. Oh God! So now Tennessee is back.
Yeah.
It becomes kind of a must win. I need two in these last one. I mean, Tennessee is the worst team in. I think they're the worst team in football. Anybody? I don't care. Worst.
Wow. They're not as bad as Cleveland.
Yes, they are. They're worse. They're worse.
Do you want to add some more bets to your?
I'm just
the
saying.
Bengals players were Instagramming from the precinct on Sunday night after. I think what I'm going to need.
Oh,
to do,
I thought about building on that.
I might need to like go around the locker room and find out dishes.
What they recommend for this. I will say I'm looking forward to I talked to Skinny about it, but he's gotta come on the podcast at some point. He's coming on.
Oh yeah.
So we'll definitely have to bring him on before the bet is finalized. Once the fifth game happens, assuming I can get a fifth win, we'll have Skinny on and we'll hash it out. What else do we have going on here? I think that about covers it.
Yeah, we got a – well, just because we like to give the end of the BBP listeners a little tease.
Tease for the BBP diehards.
Sitting down with one Adam Pac-Man Jones.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about Adam is the way he's playing this year, and it's kind of the sweet spot of his career in that he's been in the league almost a decade. I mean, I understand, you know, he didn't play a couple of those years, but – he's seen it all in terms of coverages and routes and quarterbacks, offenses. What's still, as Vance Joseph says, the ability to run. He still has the physical skills to kind of go with that. And, we got something for you coming up this weekend. I would look out. Adam's great. We'll bring you this little bit of inside knowledge on an interception, George Iloka's interception Sunday against St. Louis.
Yeah, part of what's going to be a big story from you was you sitting down with Pac-Man. So here's a little bit of insight into insight to what Pac-Man Jones is like from your conversation with him talking about George Iloka. So here's that conversation Jim had.
I don't know if it was an interception or run support or a PBU or any, or maybe even your guy didn't even get the ball on a series where you're like, you prepared for it so well that it did anything that kind of pops out in a way where you can be.
Man, it's a
whole. Because I can go back and look at the pro too. So is there a game
it's
that
it's
actually
a whole
look at?
Bunch of those that pop up.
Anything so you're particularly maybe proud of in a way that
I was really proud when George caught the one this week.
Okay, so
like, that made my day because I basically told George abort everything else and trust me on this call.
Okay,
and he did it, so I was really happy on that. And normally I wouldn't do that, but I was 100% sure.
Okay,
you know what I mean. So
so on this one, then you broke coverage or jumped a route. So I can go back and look. So what should I look for? I guess when
it was the one when I jumped and. He threw the double move.
Okay.
Well, the sign was they was doing this. The zero sign was sticks.
Okay.
And I jumped to him early. He's like, man, how the hell you know that?
Okay.
I started laughing. He's like, man, y'all know our signals, don't you? I started laughing. And then he heard Leon say something. So I seen him go over there and tell the coach. He's like, man, and I seen him do this. So I told Joy, I said, look, the next one's going to be a dummy. I said, whatever coverage I'm in, if you're in the middle of the field, I'm still going to jump it. You get what I'm saying? So you make sure you take your ass full speed over the top now.
Okay.
Because really, that's my play. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
So I should have just, pedaled, played through the double move. But I don't think he would have threw it if I wouldn't have jumped it.
Okay.
And but just little things, like when you feel something, sometimes you have to just go with your instincts. But
Do I need to go back and bleep out anything from that?
No, maybe.
maybe
we'll just let it slide.
I always make sure, you know, I try to listen to most of the interviews we have on here all the way through to make sure. Some of them I'll skim if I kind of already, I was there, I know what they were. I always I listen twice to every Adam, every time we play Adam on here, because you just never know.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to sneak in there.
Sometimes he slips in there.
Yeah, he'll slip in there and you don't notice it, but really looking forward to that. Make sure you check that out this weekend in the Inquirer in our game day section, of course, online at Cincinnati.com. We'll have that great story taking a deep look into Pac-Man. and Pac-Man on Sundays, Adam every other day, of course. And what else we got going on? I mean, we got a lot coming up in the future. So we got Tuesday night Beyond the Stripes. George Iloco will be our guest. Excited about that. Of course, every Tuesday at the Moorline Lager House. Hope to keep seeing you out there. We've had really good crowds. It's been fun having you out there recently. So hopefully we'll see you again. Of course, we have the podcast for you every single Tuesday. That's about it. So we're going to Cleveland this week. So. You know what we have to do. I know what we have to do here. We really only have one thing to do because the podcast comes out, will be posted. We're recording this right now Monday night, but when I finally get around to posting it on Tuesday, it will be, what will it be, Jim?
It'll
be the first of the month. And we're going to Cleveland. So it really only makes sense that we break out a little bit of Bone Thugs, a little first of the month. And take it out with that, because we're going to be heading up there. Looking forward to the trip to Cleveland. We'll give you a full road trip report. But until then, we will catch you. Keep checking us at sunny.com for all our content. We'll be around. And take it away, Bone.
I think it's a wonderful day, and I won't fight with my wife, cause it's the first of the month. And I'll be smoking, choking, rolling, buzzing, sipping on 40 ounces. Again, dumb, dumb, we get enough for rum. And all night we ride, the black to wear, it's night to night. I give up my partner, they give me some yay, so double up till it's what you need. We get to really get P.O.D. thing for the green leaf. Give it up for the first to show, but it lay low, cause the poor poor creep when they roll so low. Break if you can't get away, but it don't stay, yeah, yo, keep your bankroll. Yeah. We're having a celebration, let us stay high. You can never leave when it's time to grind. I'm down for mine, crime after crime. Finna creep to the bag, cause mom's got a grub on the grill. If we got the bow, oh, you know it's the first of the month, and my jewels we ducks for real.